There's been so many GRC people that have been able to lean on. I don't have to be technical for so long. And now that's not an excuse, doesn't work no more. So people out there that are like, oh, these, you know, you shouldn't code with AI tools. Great, man. Great, great fucking opinion. But there's a dude out there that just built an app that's 10 million in ARR. And he doesn't know how to code at all. There's no better MBA than running your own company.
Yeah,
like, no. especially once you start making money. Like, that's the thing I want people to know is, like, it's very easy to put a business plan together. Very easy to run a company where you're doing a few thousand dollars. When you start talking millions of dollars, if you're not willing to get told no, like, even when founders talk about raising venture capital, you got to get to 100 no's before you even think you're going to.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. And if you're listening in your car right now on your phone, on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please follow us, leave us a review, and share out the podcast to help us out with downloads. And if you're still on YouTube right now, all you got to do is hit the thumbs up button. And then if you keep on watching, subscribe. Now, today is the first official episode of AJ and Abdi. Abdi's been on the show before. AJ's been on the show before. It was on Zoom. But he was on the show before. They're out in Dallas. They're out here doing it big. They're getting active. And they decided to stop by the podcast today. So, fellas, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having us,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, we've had Abdi on. He's talked about GRC. And we had you on back in the day. And you talked about GRC. And you definitely, people still go back to that. I made like a short when you're telling people like, hey, how to get into GRC. And you're talking about like focus on the cloud thing. So, people still go back and watch that. So, I think that's pretty dope. But for the people who don't know who you are, could you reintroduce yourself from the Hove?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'm AJ Yon, currently director of GRC engineering at a company called Acquia. I've been doing this cyber thing for about 15 years, was in the Army, earned the rank of captain, went to Coalfire and did some cool stuff there, helped grow that company, started my own company, raised some money, scaled that thing up over $1 million. Went and worked at a top 20 CPA firm after that. And then now I'm in this director of GRC engineering role and just published this book, GRC Engineering for AWS. And passionate about GRC, man. I think it's a cool field, and we're finally getting our respect in these streets, which is good. But my career has been built on curiosity. You mentioned going back and like people seeing stuff from the cloud, and like that's what allowed me to scale and grow my career, was just getting addicted to the cloud and learning about AWS.
Yeah, and then we got Mr. Abdi right here.
Hey, what's going on, folks? My name's Abdi Muhammad, also from San Diego, like the good brother here. And I've been on here a few times, you know, championing GRC, championing cloud. I lead as a cloud governance advisor at Lockheed Martin, advising programs and engineers on how to use cloud effectively, security included, costs, architecture design, et cetera. And yeah, you know, I'm glad to be back on the show. Last time, you know, I had a very warm take, you know, said GRC is technical. And and what we're about to talk about today, we're going to double down on that and talk about a bit more. So stay tuned.
Yeah, with all this, the GRC roles and things I'm seeing, I'm like, man, let me get into GRC.
You should.
I've been thinking about it, though, to be honest, just figuring out, like, okay, if I'm going to do that, then I need to learn probably these couple of things. I mean, the soft skills part is easy. It's just the other things that they probably would specifically want you to do in the role. Because I know, like, and shout out to E, because E said this, but he was saying how, like, my job in, like, security operations, incident response, like, we pretty much kind of make sure that the controls that's been put in place by GRC are effective.
Yep.
So I was like, I understand, like, the other side of everything that's going on.
You understand how the controls actually operate. So now you just got to apply that to the BS framework language and stuff. But I tell people this all the time. It'd be much easier for me to teach you the GRC stuff than teach a GRC person what you know.
Yeah.
So you have an advantage over, and a lot of people are trying to hire GRC folks with skills that you have. With deeper skills on the security side versus the framework side, because that's what they need now. So you be in a good spot.
Yeah, it reminds me of like the stuff that Leah and I talk about when people are going back with him and forth about certain controls, but they don't understand the why behind the control. And he's trying to tell them, like, this is why we need this.
Yeah.
But they don't understand because they just policy pushers. What you called them last time?
Paper pushers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Paper pushers. Don't be a paper pusher. Be an engineer.
What did somebody call it? They said a framework parrot.
Framework parrot is crazy. Yo, you'll clip that up. Framework parrot. Don't be a framework parrot. Wow.
And is that, and I'm going to try to give what I think a framework parrot might be. Is that a person that just regurgitates everything? Like, whatever you say about the framework, that's what they say. It's no thought whatsoever. Yeah, they just do what's on a sheet.
They're just like, yo, like, you're supposed to do peer reviews and testing on every single change. And the person's like, yeah, we do that. It's been built into with branch protections and it's in our CI/CD pipeline. And they're like, but you have to have it here. Like, it's just, they only know how to do exactly what the framework says and have not caught up to how modern teams actually build and deploy things. It's just not based in the reality. It's based on the framework when most of the frameworks are out of date.
That's a good take. And can you expound on that? Like, the frameworks being out of date?
Yeah, so like SOC 2. We'll talk about SOC 2, for example. SOC 2 has been used as the kind of de facto framework that startups and even big companies have to get to do business with other businesses. It's you start to go through the process of procurement, and it's like, all right, cool, I like your product, but do you have a SOC 2? You don't have a SOC 2, you might not make it past that point. The SOC 2 framework, which was created by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the AICPA, was last updated, the SOC 2 guide, which everybody uses, in 2018. Think about how much technology has changed in the last 7 years. It's crazy. Like, if you look at some of the illustrative reports in the material, in kind of the doctrine, it's like, bro, the stuff they're talking about in there is like, that doesn't even make sense anymore in modern environments. They have example controls that make zero sense. And then on top of that, you have accountants who don't understand security as the ones who are ultimately auditing it, which is why you just, you know, have this out here. So it's an outdated framework that's based on old school technology used by people who are not technologists.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's a mic drop right there. We probably can end the episode
clip
right
there.
Clip
that up. Clip that up, man.
That's going to be another reason for the CPAs to hate me, bro.
Yeah,
man.
Oh, yeah, I think... I wish I would see. I want to have time to actually go through like your LinkedIn, because I remember, I think I seen you going back and forth with like a CPA guy before there, and it's like
they don't like me, bro.
I get it though. It's always somebody don't like you or whatever take based on them. But hey, like I'm standing on it.
Right. You got to have an opinion. I feel like in this world, a lot of people want to be Switzerland.
Switzerland is crazy.
They don't want to, you know, they want to just stay neutral. They don't want to get involved in anything. And it's like, bro, you got to have an opinion and then stand on your opinion, because that's, to me, is a sign of intelligence. It's a sign of knowledge. Like, yeah. I can say, and I tell people this all the time, they're like, oh, you're bashing SOC 2. Say, hey, bro, I make money off of SOC 2 still. I have SOC 2 courses on LinkedIn Learning. I still educate people on SOC 2. I still help companies with SOC 2 stuff. That's why I'm saying it sucks and needs to get better, because I know what I'm talking about and I can stand on it. That's why the CPAs are mad at me too, because they think they can stand on some of the BS CPA language that they normally stand on with other people. Like, bro, I know that language. I know what you're saying. I went to the course. The AICPA invested in my company. Like, I'm tracking. I know what's going on, and they don't like that, which is cool. Like, it's fine. Like, but you got to have an opinion. I feel like that's an important part, but it's also like, to me, it's care. Like, I care about GRC. I care about security. We're using these SOC 2s as a proxy for third-party security. We're making security decisions. Should I do business with X company? Yes or no, because they have a SOC 2. Yeah. Maybe that thing should mean something. just basic. Like, it should mean something. But, you know, we've lost the plot.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because that's how I feel about automation when it comes to security operations. Everybody talking about automations, but nothing's automated. So you just spend the money on a platform that you're not using when you could have just put that more resources on either like headcount or some knowledge gaps that you have with some training, and just actually utilize the SIM to the best of your ability. Or
that's the thing. People don't, they buy these SIMs and they don't even use them all. They don't use all the features that they're paying for. Then they buy another tool on top of it. It's like, bro, that feature exists here. We just not using it.
Not only that, they buy the SIM and then they don't put the logs that need to be in there. Even if we talk about the frameworks,
right,
that say what you need for compliances, those logs aren't even in the SIM.
Yeah.
So now you're having to go get whoever the owner of whatever app or server, whoever they is, whatever platform. Hey, we need these logs.
Right.
We can't do our job. Or we're going to keep on sending you emails every day about stuff that we see.
Yep.
So nah, it's crazy. But sticking on like just hot takes and how we feel now, I feel like I don't even say bubble of GRC, because I actually think GRC is on a second wind now, but it's just the cream is rising to the top. The people who will stay competitive, they're going to have GRC jobs. How do you feel like the take back in the day of the, you don't have to be technical, you can get in GRC. How much of a detriment do you think that was to GRC? And at the time, being a GRC professional, how did it make you feel like people saying they can just come do a job you do with no experience, like it's so easy?
Yeah, I mean, I never really felt no type of way about that because I'm like, hey, get it how you live. If you can get in here and get this money, like I encourage it because it's good money.
Make your money, young man.
Right. Yeah, but make your money. I used to hate when people, when especially my clients, would call me a technical auditor. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? My bad. Can we?
You good?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, we're evaluating technical environments, so we all should be technical auditors. But I was rare, and I didn't like that because it was like, yo, like, everybody else that's not technical is making me look bad. They're looking at me funny in the light because I'm doing different things than everybody else. So I think you're right that we are having our second win. I think there was a moment where people were talking about, oh, you can get in GRC, you don't have to be technical, because we were just kind of staying on the outskirts, right? And we didn't have to actually know about the stuff we were looking at. We would just go talk to other people. But now I think the reason why we're having our second wind is because of this GRC engineering thing. And part of it is the market. Yeah. CEOs, founders, board members, they are being told to save money, to do more with less. So they're not looking for GRC professionals that only know frameworks, only know policies, only know paperwork. They need you to actually be able to talk to the engineers. And when I did my talk in Denver a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago now, forward CloudSec on GRC engineering for AWS, I had cloud security engineers, security engineers, et cetera, all coming up to me afterwards saying, hey, AJ, I think I already do that. Yeah. I already do this GRC engineering thing. Should I be going to get roles? And I was like, damn, that's not what I was trying to do. I was not trying to encourage y'all boys to come over here. But again, if I put my founder hat on, a lot easier to teach somebody that knows cloud GRC stuff than teach somebody that only knows GRC cloud stuff. It's just the gap is huge. So I think the reason why there's a second wind is because, going back to your original question, there's been so many GRC people that have been able to lean on, I don't have to be technical, for so long. And now that's not an excuse, doesn't work no more. You can't be a GRC person and not be technical. Like, you can be it maybe now, but two, three years from now, it's going away. And now there's an opportunity for the technical folks to come in, like you were saying, like, maybe I should get in. There's a lot of people looking over at it, like, maybe I should get into it. And like, I posted a role recently, Anthropic was hiring a senior GRC risk analyst, 270 to 3 something, 325, I think.
Yeah.
Analyst. And I'm like, bro, and like, you look at the job description, it's all GRC engineering stuff. Like, if you don't have some basic Python, if you don't understand the cloud, you don't understand how some of these modern systems, whether it's containers, serverless, et cetera, work, you're not going to be able to land that job. At all. Like, you're not. And I think that's it's a challenge right now, because I think there's a window. It's like we're having our DevSecOps moment.
Yeah.
Where if you were an early DevSecOps engineer, your life's great right now.
Shout out to Damien.
Shout out to Damien.
Living good. Living good.
He's living good.
Living great.
Him and his fiance are doing well. Living, praise God.
Living great. So same thing. If you get into GRC engineering right now, you're carving your own path, you're building your own teams, you're establishing the core of a field that I think we're not going to see GRC professionals that are not GRC engineers 5 years from now. Every GRC professional will be a GRC engineer, because what is GRC without GRC engineering in a modern world of cloud and AI? It doesn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, to AJ's point, Andre, right? Think about it. If you're a paper pusher or a framework parrot, the AI, generative AI tools could do that.
Right.
They could repeat frameworks. But the systems thinking, the design thinking, the cloud, you know, understand how all these IT components, all these different teams, departments work. How does that system work? You need to have an engineering mindset. And, you know, people think AJ is trying to get rid of the, you know, GRC profession. He's trying to save it.
Right.
Like, we're trying to save it. That's why we started our Patreon.
Yeah.
That's why we started our own GRC Engineering Club. We're trying to save the folks and kind of like sound the alarm, like, hey, the days of being a framework parrot or paper pusher, they're done. Companies are slashing everything and anything that they can. And if you want to stay as a GRC practitioner, like we know people that got let go because they weren't technical enough in their GRC role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We know people that refuse to learn cloud. And right now, you know, they might still be safe right now, but the clock is ticking for even all of us, right? Like, we talked about this last time I was here. The clock is ticking for every profession. unless you are evolving, you know, it's gonna be a tough season ahead.
Yeah, for real. I mean, I always could tell too, the people who really know their stuff and then the people who don't, like they either new or they're not, you know, as, you know, technical savvy yet, but they can get there.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I know you brought up like knowing like Python or Bash or whatever you want to know. I do feel like a lot of us, I went to school, so I had to take a couple of Python classes. So I'm no master in Python. However, I do understand the background of setting variables and loops and all this other stuff. So I could prompt my way into figuring out my Python script and get it to work.
Oh, for sure.
I think that's like something like where I see where AI is beneficial that can help some people. I mean, eventually it's still good to actually know how to at least script in some sense, or just having, like you said, the mindset of knowing, hey, what do I want to do? How do I tell it what I want to do? And how do I get out of there?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of gatekeeping when it comes to AI tools, I think, nowadays. And it's like another one of these moments where if you listen to the noise, you won't use the tools. And if you're in that position, you're leading left behind, because people are using these tools and they're making millions of dollars using them. So people out there that are like, oh, these, you know, you shouldn't code with AI tools. Great, man. Great, great fucking opinion. But there's a dude out there that just built an app that's 10 million in ARR and he doesn't know how to code at all. So it's like, hey, like, cool opinion, but people out here are getting money with it. And kind of bringing it back to Python, I think, and I just wrote it recently about maybe a few weeks ago, an article in the Patreon about this, where I said why I'm all in on vibe coding and why GRC engineers should be too. And it's mainly about the learning. I'll let Abdi tell his story about this as well, because I recently got him to start using these tools. But to me, the ability to learn with these tools, with using these AI IDEs, like, man, like the stuff that you can do, and especially with these AI coding tools, man, like, I'm coming from a place, I want people to hear this, is that I had to build a company from scratch, like from an idea, just an idea, had to hire engineers, had to go through the whole process of building, and it cost a lot of money and took a lot of time. I can do all of the stuff I paid tens of thousands of dollars and years of time to do by myself now with these tools. Point blank period. Like, I can do it. And like, yes, I know probably more than the average GRC person when it comes to coding and technology and all this stuff, because I've built a company. But you can figure it out, because these tools are built to, as long as you can communicate, like you were saying, it's always funny in security people that kind of talk about this, because like, if you listen to the actual people in it, it's like, bro, like the people that are building these tools, like Kaparthy from OpenAI was like, English is the new programming language. Mm-hmm. Jensen Wang, the CEO of NVIDIA, I'm going to tell my kids to major in English, because that's the most important skill moving forward, is how to write and how to communicate. And a lot of people, I think, and this is another hot take, people that say they can't use AI or AI sucks is because they're poor communicators. You are, to me, when I hear that, I said, damn, man, you shouldn't have said that. I was thinking highly of you. Now I know you can't communicate, because the AI is the AI. Like, it's not about, like, it is what it is, but it's who, if you're getting the most out of it, which I feel like I am, it's because I can communicate clearly what I want and what I know I need. It's that simple. But I want you to talk a little bit about your journey and using these tools to learn Python and up-leveling your skills.
Yeah, so, Henri, earlier this year, you know, I mean, I told you about how, like, I'm kind of, like, a little exhausted of the hype and marketing and the sales of AI this, AI that. And really, it's just, you know, just seeing marketing and sales. And shout out to marketing and sales. We need y'all. We need, if you're in business, you need marketing and sales. That's just, let's just get that out the way. But I was annoyed because I'm seeing people talk about AI this, AI that on LinkedIn, on social media. But I'm like, dude, like, y'all don't know what you're talking about. Like you haven't used it, you haven't done your homework. You know what I mean? So that was annoying me, but, you know, AJ said, hey, listen, regardless of how you feel about it, right now, there are people using it in production and making millions of dollars. So regardless of how you feel about it, it's real. So it's not all hype, because I was more of like, yo, most of this stuff is hype, don't bother with it. You know, now I'm more of a season. I'm like, all right, I'm bought into it. Not all of it, but I'm bought in the sense of, you know, as far as education is concerned, and going from zero to one, zero to 100, Yeah, I've been using Python to I've been using Windsurf. Was it Windsurf?
Windsurf.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, what are these tools?
Yeah, so Windsurf specifically. I've been using the GPT-5 model and Claude
Sonnet 4.
Claude Sonnet Cold. 4, yeah.
That, Cold.
Listen, I'm using it right now to get my Python skills sharper. Full transparency, I recently had an interview for a job paying crazy money, north of $300K. And the only reason I didn't get that job...
Because you had no Python.
Because my Python skills weren't where it needed to be. Because I need to be cold with it.
So how are you saying, hey, show me a plan to learn Python? Or how are you using this?
So what I did was, you know, first I grabbed a chapter from his book, right? We got the chapter from the book. And then once we uploaded that chapter...
Thank you. I texted to come do it.
You know, we uploaded the chapter from the book. And he said, hey, you know, this is the lab for the book. Create a curriculum and include a couple of YouTube videos too. You know, some YouTubers who make good Python courses. I threw that in there. I said, update the curriculum. So now I have a whole curriculum plan set up. So every day I log in and say, hey, Windsurf, where are we at on the lesson plan? Okay, cool. These are the exercises that I'm doing today. All right. So as I'm doing the exercises, if it's too fast for me, I say, hey, explain it to me like I'm 5. Or, hey, you know, this doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, you're giving me too much information. You're answering. You're making it too easy. Make it a little bit more harder, make the challenges more harder. So as far as exercises and labbing is concerned, and having a professional PhD kind of teaching you along the lines, $10 a month.
Yeah, and you can ask the dumb questions. That's the thing. You ask the dumb questions. You can ask, and then you can say, hey, like, great, that script looks good. I think I understand it. Add a comment to every line of code explaining what each line of code does. You do that 5 or 6 times, eventually you're going to know, you're going to figure out, okay, this is how you do a function. Like, yeah. Because you've seen it 10 times. Yeah. Yeah. And I even told people recently, I posted a lab on the Patreon and I'm like, this is what I want people to do. Go out and just take the code that I did and go run it. Log into your AWS CLI, run it so you can feel the magic of it working. After you do that, copy, put one file up of the Python here and then open up a new window, a blank page, and copy the Python code line for line. Just literally type it. Because just typing the import statements,
muscle memory.
Typing the functions, man. Like eventually your brain gets used to this and you're going to pick up those things like, oh yeah, I got to do import JSON, import Boto 3. Like you just start to realize these things and it becomes natural and you're like, oh shit, I know this. Like, and it to me, that's one of the best things you can do with these tools, man, is like just learn faster.
Yeah.
Like the ability, and even when building stuff too, like the ability to go from idea to POC, to having a working website, to having, I mean, I'm building websites now in a few hours for people. Like people hit me like, yo, I need a website for graphic design. Recently did one for the homie for graphic design.
Are you using like Lovable?
No, I use Windsurf, bro. I use Windsurf. I deploy it to AWS, S3, and CloudFront. And it's just.
I'm going to have to check that out.
I'll put you on. I'll put you on all of it. It's just magic right now. It's the best time to be alive because we have our hands, we have the ability to truly create whatever we want. I feel like right now I can build anything I want. Anything from an I have an app that's live in Puerto Rico right now with users that are paying and doing things with Stripe connected, all kinds of stuff. It's active. It's live. And I built that from scratch by myself. And it's like, I would not, if you told me 5 years ago I would do that, I thought you were crazy. Like, bro, no, I don't know how to code. I don't know React. I don't know TypeScript, blah, blah, blah. Like, and again, like, I think I'm unique because I was a founder and I was really close to this stuff. So I seen an app being built, but still it is possible. Like you're seeing it, like you can, and part of what I'm going to be doing in the Patreon soon is showing people how to build their own websites with Vibe Coding using AWS, because a lot of people go to like a Lovable or Vercel or Netlify.
Wix, shout out to Wix.
Yeah, even Buddy was telling me, he was like, I had this on Wix or like Squarespace or Webflow is a new one.
Mm-hmm.
But you, those are fine. It's just they put you in these little boxes. But AWS is cheap. And for GRC engineers, you're learning AWS as...
And it's your proof of concept.
Right, as you're doing it. Like you build something on AWS, it's like, and then you just keep using these services and you keep learning things. Like with CloudFront right there, easy example. You can launch a static website. When I say static website, just like any website. If you go to my grcengineeringbook.com website, I built that. It's hosted on S3 via CloudFront. you can go try to do anything you want to it. I got a web application firewall in front of it because CloudFront comes with WAF in front of it. You can throw five rules in front of it for like $3 a month. And it's like, bro, I have enterprise grade security on some BS that I just built. And it's like, you start to think about all the stuff you can do with the cloud, with these tools. It's like, man, I could really build something. I can get dangerous if I'm willing to lock in and willing to get my hands dirty and willing to go through the mud. That's the part is like, I don't think people are willing to, and I mean, it's the same thing as before with security and getting into tech. Like, you got to be willing to be confused to get into this. Like, yeah, people sure. aren't giving out this much money for nothing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And then before we get into like the book stuff,
yeah.
I know the people that's watching, you keep on talking about being a founder and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Could you talk about the company that you were running?
Yeah. So I ran a company called ByteCheck, started it in 2020 in the pandemic. As a compliance automation company. We helped companies get SOC 2s and HIPAAs and all those little frameworks with automation. We connect to their cloud providers, their HR tools, et cetera, and pull in information and automate the evidence collection. Built that company for about 3 years, went through all kinds of journeys, near acquisition. I thought I was a millionaire. It was 2 days. I signed the deal, recorded the video announcing it. Deal fell through. Had my back against the wall, had to go raise some venture capital, was able to go out and raise $3.5 million, and then was able to scale the company up to about $1.3, $1.4 million in revenue. We were getting ready to raise our Series A round in the fall of 22. Yeah, November 22. The round fell through at the last second. I had to go out and find somebody to try to buy us. And found two people to buy the company, two companies to buy the company. My investors from the VC round, they wanted more money on the deal, started negotiating back and forth. Deal ultimately fell through. Steve Jobs and I have something in common that both of us were fired as CEOs from our own company. So the board fired me as the CEO of the company, and I basically got acqui-hired myself and my engineers over at Armanino, where we went and basically built a similar, built a an app in the same spot. But yeah, so it was a hell of a journey, man. I learned a lot about myself, first and foremost, because running your own company, especially doing it the way I did, where I think a lot of times people hear about founders and they kind of think that they have a safety net. Like, oh, yeah, you can go start a company because you can fall back on your mom's or pops or money. Like, that's not my situation at all. Like, I was making the most money. I was making like $250 a year, I think, at the time when I quit my job to go to zero and go start this company. And it was a grind. But I went and changed it for the world. Learned a lot about business, learned a lot about myself, and was able to do it, man. Like, a lot of people talk about it, but fortunately I was able to build a company from zero to one and go through that journey. Obviously I wish it would have continued and I would have made a bunch of money and I don't have to work no more, but it is what it is. Like I live by this principle. I think it was Will Smith that said, like, when you're on your deathbed, you're gonna have a bunch of these ghosts around your bed of the things you wish you would have done. I don't want to have any ghosts around my bed. And starting the company was one of those things I wish I would have done. Did it, had some success. And you know, like I've said a lot to a lot of people, you either win or you learn. And I feel like with ByteCheck, I definitely learned a lot. I won a little, but I learned a lot. But it was a good journey. Yeah, like being a founder and CEO teaches you a lot about yourself, a lot about business, a lot about leadership, a lot about time management, a lot about sales. You gotta figure out how to close some deals. A lot about money and just how money works, especially at that level. When you start talking millions, you start seeing how people move differently when you start talking about that type of money. So yeah, man, it was a hell of an experience. The hardest thing that I ever done, that I ever did by far, you know, waking up every single day and just grinding, knowing that it's up to you to feed your family. And then, you know, when you start hiring employees and stuff too, like, you got all these people that are like, they got families, they got mortgages, and you're trying to build for them too. And you feel that responsibility. So, shout out to ByteCheck, man. Special place. Abdi actually met some of the people that worked at BiCheck with me out in New York a few weeks ago. And it's love, because one of the things I'm super proud of is we built a culture there, like a real culture where our number one core value was people first. And I truly care about humans before anything else. It's like, bro, like I don't care about much other than like, are you good as a human? Because all this stuff is whatever. And so we had a really, really special culture that I'm proud of, that even when, you know, when we were going through the tough times, we stayed together and everybody held it down, which is what I cared about more than anything, was that the people that sacrificed a lot to be a part of it still respected me and understand who I am as a person.
Yeah. No, you actually answered one of the questions that I was going to ask, like the hardest thing about being a founder. And I can't remember if this was a talk on X or not, but do you think that's why a lot of people, and I'm talking about like founder business and stuff, do you think that's why a lot of those people who get in those startups and everything else, a lot of those guys like have MBAs because it like helps them in the business sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think having some of that baseline financial business knowledge definitely would have helped. I would have not had to learn some things on the job, but there's no better MBA than running your own company.
Yeah,
like,
no, for sure.
especially once you start making money. Like, that's the thing I want people to know is, like, it's very easy to put a business plan together. Very easy to run a company where you're doing a few thousand dollars. When you start talking millions of dollars and you're talking employees and you're talking money going in and out and all of this, profit and loss statement, EBITDA, and you're like raising venture capital and you have to have projections, mm-hmm. you start getting into some nasty finance. Like, I got these books in my house, like Finance for Business Managers, Finance for Dummies. Like, I was reading because it was so, I mean, I imagine it could have helped, but there's so many experiences as a founder mm-hmm. that there's not a program that will ever prepare you for that. Because one of the things that I tell people all the time is, like, think about this. When our company got to about 24 people total, I hired really smart people. Like, I worked very hard to recruit really good people. So every day when these people are bringing me their problems, these are really smart people that couldn't solve this problem. So all day I'm just getting shit. Just getting the worst of the worst shit from the smartest people I know in their domains. Yeah. Right. And they're coming to me like, I can't solve this. And it's either product, sales, people, operations, customer support. Like, it's all of these big problems. So all day you're just being fed problems and you're expected to solve them. And like, you could have the best day of your company and the worst day of your company in the same day before 11 a.m. It's 11 a.m. and you're like, yo, I thought this was all over. And now I think we're going to be a $1 billion company. And then you got to hop on another call and you got to do it. And you just got to turn the switch on and keep going. So, like, I think the thing about the hardest part that I would say is it's a consistent sprint. But it's a consistent sprint that you're running barefoot on glass. You are running barefoot on glass and you just have to keep running. Every day, you know, it's going to be some net. You know, you're going to get told no 10, 15 times in a day. Easily. You're going to lose deals. You're going to lose to competitors. Somebody's going to message you about something bad on the product, how they want to quit. Somebody's not going to pay you. One of your employees might want to quit. Mm-hmm. VCs are telling you no. And you just got to be like, you literally kind of have to be a psychopath as a founder because you can't care about the nose.
Like a detachment.
You cannot care. You have to be so focused on the vision of what you think that you're going to get to that even when I started the company, everybody in my family was like, are you crazy, bro? First of all, you're taking care of us. You giving me money. Are you going to be able to still give me some money after you do this? No, I'm not. They're like, okay, now are you really crazy? Because why would you leave this job? You're working from home. Everything's good. And it's like, I had to have such a desire for something else and something bigger that if you don't, I mean, you're going to fail because the no's will get to you. If you're not willing to get told no, like even when founders talk about raising venture capital, you got to get to 100 no's before you even think you're going to get to your first yes. You got to have 100 people call your baby ugly and tell you this is a dumb idea. You're not the right guy to do it. People used to tell me you didn't go to the right school. You don't have the right background.
You went to FSU.
And you hoop there. Stanford, Cal, they want to see all the Bay Area or the Ivy Leagues.
But you saying that, Is that why, and this reminds me of the show Suits, right?
But yeah, yeah. Hey, shout out to Suits. How y'all doing?
Is that why a lot of companies will posture themselves with certain people with certain backgrounds off of the strength that they know their alumni base and investor base is heavy?
100%. 100%. I mean, it's pattern matching. That's all the VCs are doing is pattern matching. They're saying, okay, I invested in this company. The founder went to Stanford, had majored in this degree. I'm looking for more Stanford grads. Oh, this company had a Stanford CEO, a Harvard X, a Cal CTO. That's who I'm going for. Like, it's pattern matching. So when you come show up.
So it's like Tinder.
It's exactly like Tinder. Wow. Like, so you show up, think about the VC calls are very like Tinder, bro. Like, because you can get a call. A lot of people, like, I'll talk to a lot of founders who are like, man, I'm getting all these calls with VCs. I'm like, that's their job. Their job is to listen to pitches all day. Does not mean they fuck with your idea. That's their job. Is they need to get signals from the market and understand, and then they have to improve their conversation back with you, and they have to get deal flow. It's called deal flow. They're trying to get founders in their pipeline. You have to like really get through that part of like, are they really like, do they really like this? Like, are they really? And it's, and like you hop on the call, and I used to see it, man. Immediately, I knew this dude was going to say no because I didn't match
what he was looking for.
And a lot of times, I would try to change the conversation by mentioning the army thing, mentioning the military. Like, oh, and you see a little bit of a bro. I'll tell you this example.
Oh, good, that's funny.
When I was in Miami, there was this fund based out of I think North Carolina. I can't remember, maybe Georgia. Think about this. This is their archetype that they invest in: military officers.
Okay, check.
College athletes.
Check.
And in cyber.
Check. Oh my God, you hit all three.
I said, bro, this is a lock. They're about to invest. Yeah. Crazy, Brett. Yeah. They come fly down to Miami, take me out to dinner, have a great conversation, go back. Hey, we're going to go in a different direction. You just don't really fit our profile. So what profile is that? Never got an answer. But it's like, bro, like I could go look at your portfolio companies. They're on your page. I'd see the demographics of every founder. I see how I can very clearly see that I would stand out. If you put me on your portfolio page as one of your founders, I didn't match the pattern despite actually matching the pattern. And it's just like, that's what I was up against. I was one of the less than 2% of black founders to raise over $1 million in venture capital. Think about how many black founders you know.
Yeah.
Not that
like, we're not able to raise money. We're fighting a battle. That's part of the reason why I was happy when kind of things ended up, because I was like, I just kept feeling like I'm fighting a battle that I have no chance in, because no matter my stats are good, everything looks good, it looks the part, but y'all just are not going to give me this bread.
Right. funny that you said that. I thought about something silly in my head. That's why I started laughing. But two, I actually did an episode with a black VC. And I think we talked about a little about that. It's like how so hard it is to like to get us money and stuff.
Yep.
But then the other joke I thought about in my head was about the $500,000 of dinner with Jay-Z.
What?
So I'm like, you taking the dinner with Jay-Z?
I'm doing that, Brad.
Listen, I'm taking the money and I'm going to listen to all of his albums.
Right. I'm getting that, Brad. Like,
I'm taking he dropped job. So much so game in his
might,
music.
He might want Roc Nation to help run something.
Right. I'm gonna take that bread and then I'll do something enough with that bread to get the dinner with Jay-Z later.
What do y'all call that honor in corporate? I'll circle back.
Yeah, I'll circle back.
So now I'm gonna ask you a fun question. What does GRC mean to you?
That's a good question. To me, GRC is the it's kind of like the glue. Somebody asked me recently, they were like, is GRC a separate part of cyber or is it a piece of cyber? And I think the reason why GRC has failed in the past is because it's been trying to be a separate part of cyber, and it just needs to be a piece of cyber. It needs to be a piece of the cyber equation, but I think it should be the glue that brings together all of the other stuff that we're doing to make it matter for the business. Most companies that all of us work at are not in the business of security.
Nope.
They're in the business of something else, and that's how they make their money. So they don't care. So GRC should help them care about security. When GRC is done right, it helps you care about security. And I think, it's because it's the glue that kind of, you think about like a broken cup of glass or something, right? like you bring it all back together and you put it, now I can actually see the value. Mm-hmm. But when it's all scattered on the floor, I can't see it. And that's how to me security is. You got cloud security over here, SecOps yeah. over here, and the CISO is trying their best at the top to have that conversation, but the board doesn't understand it, doesn't care. But then when you start saying, hey, our security program just got us FedRAMP, which unlocked $100 million in potential revenue. Yeah. Now they're listening.
Yeah.
So to me, GRC can become that vehicle, become that glue that actually elevates and makes security matter. But I think for that to happen, GRC has to be a part of security, not an outsider like legal coming in and saying, hey, what are you guys doing? And it's like, no, that doesn't work because they're not going to tell you and you don't know. It has to be truly a part of the ecosystem. I believe GRC engineers should be on other teams. They should not be in a GRC team. They should be with developers. They should be with security. Oh, yeah. They should live closest to the product as possible and close to the technology as possible. Because again, like if not, what are they doing? They're on the outside asking for evidence. Why do you need evidence? You should just go get the script that you run. Like you're doing incident response. You have your plan. You know what you have to do. You know how to execute your incident response. I don't need you to prove to me that you did your job. I can just go get that information that shows me you did your job. The problem is they don't know how to use any of the tools because they're coming from an outside. So yeah, to me, I would say it's like the glue that should be like glue, bringing all the pieces of cybersecurity together to show the value of what security is actually doing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I also do not like that when you get in cyber, most of these bigger orgs, a lot of stuff's just siloed. Like you really don't know what somebody's working on. You're lucky. Right. If the pen test team tell you they got some pen tests going on, hopefully you work with the vulnerability management team on they working on these different exploits that just came out or what Intel or Inside Risk is doing or what type of things that GRC is trying to implement. Then you rarely know until it's too late. That's when you kind of find out about it. But if people actually talk to each other maybe once a quarter or every two,
that's crazy. We,
I think it'd be much better. It wouldn't be so siloed.
This is why GRC, I think you need to run your GRC program like a product and just be doing 2-week sprints all year. If you think about, all right, I'm going to do 2-week sprints all year. 1 week you could be working with DevSecOps folks. The next week you can be working with HR. Mm-hmm. Like the time that I talk to you shouldn't be when the audit's going on.
Oh, for sure.
I should have already been talking to you. I used to hate when I go in there and I'd be in it. This is back before COVID, like we'd be in person. And I'm talking, I get the whole overview from the GRC person. Then the people start coming in the room. Engineer comes in and I'm like, yeah, so I understand your process is X, Y, and Z. And they're like, no, we don't do that. We haven't done that in 2 years. And I look at the GRC person like, yo, you just told me this was the process. And this dude who does the job says they haven't done this in 2 years. What have you been doing?
Because I saw
you here 12 months ago.
Yeah.
12 months ago, we had the same conversation and you didn't know. Now, 12 months later, you still don't know. And it's like, again, because they don't have any clue. They're not talking to these people. They only show up when the auditor shows up and says, yo, come in this room real quick. And it's like, bro, like that to me is the fastest way for AI to replace you and for you to be. That's why, going back to your point, we're trying to save the profession. I love GRC, but I feel like it's at risk. If you're not technical, you're going to get fired. And I don't want people to be like, oh, AJ is calling, like whatever. They're going to say it no matter what. Like somebody told me the other day, a recruiter, because he commented on my post, because I called GRC. I said, GRC professionals are middleware. All you're doing is passing information. I've been on calls. I've seen it in real life where auditor says, I need evidence of this. The GRC person goes to the engineer. I need evidence of this. And then the engineer gives it to them. They go back to the auditor. Here's what it is. And they're like, I don't understand what this is. They go back and they're just passing information. I'm like, that's going to get replaced. And then a recruiter commented and was like, so you think recruiters are middleware? I was like, hey.
Hey, you said it.
I said, hey, you're not going to like my answer, but I don't need, I would never need a recruiter as an individual because my brand is too strong. And two, as a company, I feel like if you need a recruiter, your brand's not strong enough as a company that people want to work for you. You're not attracting high quality talent.
Yeah.
I don't need, and I told him this, he was like, it seems like you just want to automate everybody's jobs that aren't yours. I said, hey, buddy. I think my job's getting automated too.
Which is why we're doing this.
I'm going to evolve. So like, and it's just like people always come to me like, oh, you're trying to get rid of jobs. I'm just speaking real.
You're being honest.
I'm being honest. Like it's
founder perspective.
You're going to like people at the highest levels are thinking in dollars and cents. That's it. Mm-hmm. And if you are a cost center that is not adding value, I told him this, a lot of times we look at from the executive level, I look at your salary. If I'm paying you $100,000, I better get $300,000 of value out of you. I better get 3X. When it starts dipping below that 3X, now I got to start having some questions. And in GRC, if all I'm doing is passing information back and forth, And the guy that I'm passing information to, I can just empower him with an AI chatbot that knows the SOC 2. Why do I need you, middleware?
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually know the technology, you built a relationship with you, you've sat into the SOC, you've sat down and seen incident response, you know about the major incidents that have happened over the last year. When the auditor shows up, now the audit happens. You didn't have to waste anybody's time. And I talk about it in the book, like just mapping out the time that you can save from engineers being involved in audits. And I don't think people realize how much engineers are paid. And then you map out those hours. You're saving the company millions of dollars if you just keep them out of these meetings. Because context switching is real for engineering. Yeah. It's so real. So you go to put them in a 1 hour auditor meeting, you kill 3 hours of their day. That's 3 hours of them not coding. When I was a founder, all I cared about were my engineers shipping code. Yeah. I used to call, like, hey, can we hop on a call? Do we have to? Or can you keep coding and we sync up asynchronously? I'll record a video. Watch the recording.
Listen, you speaking my language. I should have worked for you. Because when I said JPMC, I was like, look, we ain't got Loom or nothing in here that I could just make a video and record this and y'all watch it later.
Right.
I don't want to be talking to y'all about this right now. It's not benefiting me and it's a waste of my time.
And I think we've lost the plot with the Zoom culture. Everything doesn't have to be a Zoom call.
Everything does feel like a Zoom.
Everything doesn't have to be a Zoom call, bro. Like, everything does not have to be a Zoom. We don't always have to have a meeting. We don't always have to schedule time to talk about this. And I don't have to respond right away.
Yeah, funny enough that you're saying that Confluence has just implemented its AI tool for, I forgot what exactly it's called, but we do like a lot of STOs for the different ships. So now, if you make the call, hey, just get the AI thing to do your recap of what happened on the STO and you'll be able to figure out what happened. And then to talk about your middleware thing, that's kind of funny to me because of everybody who pretty much is in IR right now, and either they've been working with legal or GRC, they've been pretty busy with this Salesforce CRM drifting. Mm-hmm. Everybody's sending emails everywhere. Everybody's trying to figure out all these third-party things. Hey, what data they got of ours or whatever. But it is a lot of, hey, what did you say again? Okay, I'm going to tell you this. Oh, what did they say? It is a lot of that.
Just or passing information.
They don't even, like, I had the situation where I was talking to a legal person and I was telling them something from what the incident commander said. And they really didn't understand what he said. So I had to pretty much simplify it and said, hey, this is what he said right here. And they was like, oh, thank you. And they said, I was like, we definitely do have that going on. So it is hard if you don't understand that because it was a very simple thing.
Right.
But you just have to kind of.
And it'll be very hard for you to, like, just overnight. Or use AI to become as skilled as at the law.
Facts.
I don't think that's the case with GRC. Like, it's not that hard. Like, I think I could get you spun up and, like, you'd be fine because you know other stuff that a lot of GRC professionals don't know. So and somebody actually challenged me that. They were like, you don't think it'd be difficult to, like, learn all that? And I'm like, No.
They're frameworks, man. They're frameworks and controls.
They're static. Yeah. It's static information, bro. Like, if you understand how the security actually works, you understand, like you said, you understand the controls because you understand how they operate. Yeah. You might not understand the language we put around the controls, but you understand how that's more important.
Right. The most important. Yeah, it's the most important.
It's like somebody that knows how to cook a mean brisket. But then you ask them to write the recipe and they don't know it. It's like, I don't care that you don't know how to write the recipe. I care about the brisket.
Yeah, exactly. I want to make it too.
Right.
Yeah, but no, I mean, that's facts. It's telling somebody, hey, this is why we need these type of Windows logs. So, hey, when our IR team is doing these things, we can figure out if we compromised or not. If we don't have these, we cannot figure this out.
Exactly.
All these different things. Yep. But moving on to this term, everybody's probably, if they're still here now, if you're still here, please hit the like button. And if you're also in the premiere chat, what up, though? Now, you've been saying this term, GRC engineering. What made you write the book for GRC engineering?
Yeah, for me, going back to like 2017, 2018, I've been just focused on how do we do compliance better, smarter. It's why I started the company. And then a couple of years ago, the first few people I hired at ByteCheck, their job titles were GRC engineers. And I did that strategically. It was before this thing even came up. And it was because I wanted our customers to feel like they were getting technical resources from their GRC people, not customer success folks. You're getting somebody that's actually leveraging your tech to do the GRC work. And then two or three years ago, I realized, like, man, like, the GRC space is still the exact same it was when I was doing this eight years ago or so. Like, there's no technical resources out there for GRC folks. Like, if you want to get technical, you got to kind of do what I did. YouTube University, go on AWS, just like learn this stuff on your own. There's nothing that's focused for us. It's always about security ops or cloud security, all the labs and everything. I'm like, we need a resource. And it was like, GRC professionals need to get technical. And like every mentee conversation I was having with people I was mentoring, I was telling them about getting technical. Like, bro, go to the command line. Yeah, I was telling him, he was running from the command line when we first met.
I was running from the command line. I was scary, man.
Get in this command line.
Hit him up in 2019 and I was like, hey, man, I'm in a GRC role. This command line kind of scary, man. I feel pretty dumb doing this. He said, get your butt back in that command line and you keep going. You just keep going in.
And I had so many conversations like that, and I'm like, and then people hitting me up like, what skills do I need? And I'm like, yo, like, I need to put this down. And then I have a 9-year-old son, a 7-year-old daughter, and I've had this desire to write a book for a very long time. I wanted to leave something. He's a junior. He has the same name as me. So I wanted to leave something that he physically can have with his name on it that his dad created. So the book was a part of that too, but it's a passion. Like, obviously people seeing this can hear me talk about it, but I think the profession's at risk. I didn't think we had any resources out there. I get thousands of messages asking for help. And I'm like, what's one way I could give back without, you know, not having a job and just sitting on calls all day, mentoring people, was writing a book. And I wanted to write a book that really takes people from zero to one. But also, if you're a seasoned GRC person, you can pick it up and just open up to a section, because it's like very modular. I got a section on what GRC engineering is, a section on AWS, a section on Python, and then a section on the careers. So like, you could kind of pick and choose your own adventure. But my goal was like to have a resource for GRC folks, which has been the dopest thing about the reception and how it's been going, is that people are like, yo, like, I read your book and like, yeah, I'm with it. Like, I think I can do this. I finally got a resource that I can use in the GRC world. So yeah, man, it's been a passion of me, like mine. Like, I would say, like, GRC engineering before it was a term was what ByteCheck was founded on. Like, that's what the company was. It was just GRC engineering. And then I hired GRC engineers there, and I'm loving the fact that it's this new movement and people are supporting it. I'm loving the fact that I'm in a GRC engineering role, and lead a bunch of GRC engineers and doing, you know, I spend my days in AWS and writing Python all day, which I love. It's so much fun. Way better than being on Zoom calls talking to VCs. So, yeah, man, it's a passion. And I really, like, kind of going back to what Abdi said, like, I hope the book helps us save the profession. Like, and I hope this GRC engineering movement really becomes the DevSecOps of GRC, so that we can continue to do the very important work that we do.
Yeah, I think a lot of roles that are like analyst based have to get more technical. Like, even what I do, like, yeah. I see the shift of more like SOC engineers,
yeah,
or security engineers, but they, yeah, want you still know all these other things and know about automations, know about containers,
yeah,
know about all these other like full technologies. Stack. Yeah. So
full stack.
That's where like where it's transitioning, yeah, to. And so you gotta learn, hey, have you rolled new detections and not detections, like all those different stuff. That's what it is you gotta evolve to. So that's what you gotta learn.
Yep.
So now I'm with you on the evolving thing, because if not, you're gonna get left behind. Cause, you know, in a pandemic, everything was about getting in. And then only like certain people had content on case staying in.
No, there was nobody. I mean, who was talking? Maybe you, maybe Andre. I know, that was probably it. Like,
no, I just have like, all I have is like my LinkedIn learning course is about like, you know, advancing your career.
Right.
But there is not a lot of stuff, like, because, you know, on X, sometimes on LinkedIn, but really more so on X, it's a lot of us, we've been in a decade, 15, 20, yeah, 30 years.
Season, yeah.
And to, it gets lost in translation with the newbies, because we're starting to tell them, okay, cool, now you need the knees down, find a specialty, right, and do like learn these other things. And they don't want to. Or they think what information we give them, we're gatekeeping, and they don't really understand what real gatekeeping is.
Real gatekeeping, man, is when you tell someone, buy my course, I'll guarantee you get the job.
I guarantee you $100K salary if you buy my course.
That's real gatekeeping, right, bro. Because that's not setting them up for success long term.
I don't even think that's gatekeeping. I just think find a fool, use a fool.
True.
For a lot of people.
Fair enough. We'd make a lot of money if we were scammers, man.
No, for real. I was talking about earlier.
You got people.
But no, this is the thing I also tell people too when they think about getting in the tech, whether it's any type of domain. Know your learning style. Are you a quick learner? Are you inquisitive? If not, it's going to be hard for you to go from driving trucks to now, hey, okay, right. Cool. I'm trying to, not only are you trying to possibly get in GRC, you're trying to get in the specialty of GRC. Oh, I'm trying to get a PCI DSS. With what background?
Right.
Yeah. They're not just handing out them jobs to anybody because that's not something you really can just learn. You can watch YouTube and everything else, but they want you to actually be in the practical environment and learn unless you know who owned the company and they hire you.
Which is rare.
So you had a lot of people doing that and they didn't have experience with it because, hey, the exception didn't make the rule. I know people that went from zero to go on to do it, but most people were not able
to. It's a small, like, let's talk 1%.
I think, though, I'll say a counter to that that I've been talking to a lot of GRC people about, and it goes back to kind of what we've been talking about today with there's a gap right now with current GRC professionals where they don't have these technical skills. Mm-hmm. So I think if aspiring GRC pros or current build portfolios that showcase projects of them doing stuff, you'll have a leg up. And I thought about this with like cyber and just GRC in general portfolios, because when I was a founder, hired UI UX designers, engineers that came from non-technical backgrounds, but they all had portfolios.
I agree with the portfolio thing.
Why we don't do that. Like we in cyber, I hired this designer. I mean, the portfolio was crazy. I'm like, yo, this is talent. Like you could see the talent jumping off the website. And I think same thing with like a GRC portfolio. A guy showed up to me with truck driver experience, but then I look on his portfolio and he's automated X, Y, and Z with Security Hub. He's generating reports with Lambda functions in Python compared to this dude that has 5 years of experience that only knows frameworks.
I'm glad you said that because one of my clients, I actually just posted about her on Instagram. She went from like getting no type of callbacks or anything to now interviewing like Amazon and some other companies to do some compliance stuff. I think she has pretty much like a military background. She did more like the contract risk type of stuff, but she still understands the general concept of GRC and did trainings and stuff. I got to meet her at Blackest Tech Week a couple weeks ago, and then literally a couple of days or something after that, she had went and made her risk register with Lovable. So I'm like, okay, now you got stuff you actually can show these people what you're doing. And I was like, that's going to be a good way for you to stand out against the people who are just saying they can do it.
Exactly.
You're doing the showing and not telling. So I know I definitely agree on portfolios, especially for that maybe entry to mid. I'll probably say that point because I also know in certain roles, if it's like senior or above senior, you may not even get no onboarding or training. We need you to hit the ground running.
They want to know what you know, what you actually know. And I tell people all the time, like when I hire a role, within the first couple hours, I get 100 resumes and they all look the same. So if you have a resume that's a project and I actually have a portfolio template, I'll send you the link for people to just copy and use and they can create their portfolio for free using GitHub and GitHub pages. But if you have projects, you're going to stand out. I literally have told our HR folks, if they have projects on their resume, I want to talk to them, period.
But like, you're a smart person, though, because some people discount that. But it's the reason why, like, a lot of people that are trying to get in, they don't have the skills. I say, hey, okay, cool. Let's go do the Josh Matacore stuff, because he's the master of helping them at least start a portfolio.
Yeah,
Matacore smooth,
And, like, all the stuff that they do, like, it's maybe simple to people that's high up there. But, hey, if you're trying to get an entry-level person and now, okay, oh, you built out your own SIM.
Right.
Oh, you stood up a ticketing system.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did this in Active Directory.
And it gives you something to talk about in the interview.
Yeah. Hey, how'd you do that? You struggle with the lab. Tell me about how you struggle with the lab. So all those different things, I think they really help out. And that's what some people are missing, too, because, like, everybody thinks it's going to be easy.
That's a grind, man.
You know, people try to compare themselves to the outliers and everything. Because we've been having this running joke where we've been talking about why, like, we like WGU, but we're against WGU in a sense. Like, we really more so like it for, and I say me, it's like me, bees, other people. We say it's really better for people who may be already in the field. Yeah. Or if you just want to get a degree. But for the most part, if you're going to utilize college in maybe the right way with getting your company to pay for it, find a decent college that's affordable, that has a name, that has an alumni base that you can build a network with
100%.
And not have to just chase so many certs. Because they got these people taking all these different certs and you throw them in their resume. How can you get no interviews? Yeah, because you got Project Plus, A Plus, Network Plus, all these different things that you will not find on the job description of the role you want.
And so
you got that, but then you'll have a guy like this guy in the comments. Matter of fact,
pulling it up.
Yeah, you know me. I missed the receipts because I took a screenshot of it. Hopefully, it's on here. If I did it on her stuff, here it is. So, Bees had a video and she was talking about like breaking down like why she made a video about the WGU cybersecurity degree. And she was talking about how like a lot of people in WGU are having issues with internships and other stuff. And so this one guy had a comment. He said, well, I'm in WGU's master program without 5 internships and some full-time tech experience, but got to do something while you wait to get a job. Not to mention, a lot of employers don't count internships as experience, which that was a red flag to me when he said that. He said, I'm taking Security Plus this month, but most jobs won't pay for your degree until you're there for a year, and that's if you're still at the job a year later. And then he brought up an outlier. He said, Bidet is a cybersecurity engineer.
Bidet Johnson?
Yeah, and works for Amazon with a bachelor's degree from WGU. And I'm like, well, first of all.
But Day is different.
Day is different, and Day used to work with me at Optiv. He went and finished WGU after he was already in the industry.
Right.
It wasn't that he went to WGU and then got to Amazon. He already had experience.
Yeah.
He left Datadog and went to Amazon. So it's like, I said, you can't use a person like that. Dude,
Day's an anomaly.
Day is, what, 21 or 22?
They
I think there's a lot of people that focus on the there's this quote by John Wooden that says don't confuse activity with achievement. And a lot of people that are trying to get into this field think it's activity that will get you in there. If I get all these certs or if I'm networking, that's not a thing. Like, networking to me is about, and I say this all the time, it's like not about who you know, it's about who knows you and what do they know you know. If I don't know anything about what you actually know, I can't help you when an opportunity comes up. I can't be like, oh yeah, Abdi does FinOps and cloud governance. Oh yeah, you guys are looking, I know a guy. If I just know his name, cool dude, know your name, but I don't know you. So like, and I think a lot of times people that are trying to break in too, they forget, like you're saying, one, this is a transaction, man. Like, we talk about, like, there's a lot of conversations out there about salaries, like actually on the pod, on the Patreon recently, I walked through my salary from when I started to where I'm at today. Complete transparency about all my, exactly how much I'm making, and kind of share that, because I don't think a lot of people do that. But people hear that, and like a lot of my dogs, a lot of my homies hear that, and they see the way I live, they see the way I move in, they're like, I want to do that. And they get attracted to the lifestyle and the money. I'm like, what you don't see is the grind that was behind there. This is a transaction at the end of the day. If I'm a company and I'm giving you $100,000, I'm expecting value back from that money. And as you go up and more, there's a lot of value they're expecting back from that money. So with that, it is very difficult to get into this. And if you think like, oh, I'm just going to do this because so-and-so did it, you're wilding, because your situation is different. The time is different. The market's different. You have to run your own race. Facts. And go at your own pace, and then also navigate things differently. To your point about whoever, I don't know who Buddy is, but he was somewhere else. He started his degree while he was there. He went to another company. Like, you don't understand the relationships, the experiences, and even in the interview, the conversations that he was able to have because of his past experiences. You're just trying to chase his resume. Versus getting the, and it's a confusing activity. I see so many people do it. They confuse activity for achievement. They're like, I did this, I did that, I did that. I'm like, how is any of that getting you closer to landing a job?
Yeah, no, it's facts. And then even on X, I was like, I kind of debunked everything he said. I said, listen, because I met Dave 5 years ago, he was 18.
Oh.
And I was like, I haven't met too many 18-year-olds like him.
Right.
Literally. Oh, yeah. It's only a couple, it's like he's one-on-one. It's only a couple people I know like him where they were very young, ambitious, and literally able to get things done and do stuff. Because I have another friend that's similar like that. He's a little older than Dave, but he's not 30 yet. But we worked together at Optiv and McAfee. And I had he always uses me for references for companies. And so I was talking to the guy that would have been his manager at a role that he was interviewing for. And I pretty much told him everything that they already knew, but they just wanted me to confirm it. I was like, there's only so many people that's like that. And then that's when you realize, like, when you go to certain companies, you've seen these people who've been at the role 10 years. And they're just like, they're just there. Like you said, the person with the audit, hey, they said that's not the process. How you didn't know that?
Right.
And it reminds me of another conversation that I have with my guy. I got to get Lee back on the show, man. Clayton, we always talk about how companies may need to tweak the years of experience thing. Because just because at one time, if I'm doing something for, like, I got 15 years of experience, maybe in a pocket of 5 years, I was super sharp. But now, I probably is not as sharp as that guy that got 2-3 years at some startup that's did all these different things that can do everything on his bullet sheet, except he don't got the years of experience. So you're going to tell him no.
But I think that's where you got to kind of take it into your own hands and have your brand that stands out beyond years of experience. I saw a job description recently at Acquia, the company I work for I think a senior GRC engineer or something that I don't, based off of how it was written, I don't qualify for. And I'm the director of GRC engineering. But I didn't have to qualify for a job description. I was able to leverage my brand and my relationships to get the job. And I think if you're somebody that's 2 to 3 years experience, but you're cold and you know you're better than the dudes with 10 years, build projects, learn in public, build your brand.
Yeah.
So that people know you for what you know, not just off of the resume, because your resume is not going to stand up.
Yeah.
It's not going to get past it's not going to get past the people that you needed to get past to have the real conversation to showcase your skills. It's not going to make it past that.
Yeah. And funny that you said that. That is how they got at Data Dog. The guy you were talking about earlier, the Darwin,
yeah.
I met him through Day at AfroTech in 2023 in Austin. Wow. Yeah. So that's how I met him. But they got to Data Dog because you probably seen him before, dude. Like YouTube and everything. His journey from being a little, like, of course he was a teenager at the time, but you would consider him a kid at the time. Yeah. So now you're like, oh man, this dude, I do need to talk to this guy. He's the type of person I want on my team.
Yeah.
But that's what you do. He just talk about stuff he's building. And then I always tell people, you never know who's on what social media platform.
Man,
you got hiring managers and directors are on there too. If you own that building, they may want
to
talk to you.
And a lot of people wait to show like the final thing that they have. And it's like, nah, show the journey and the struggle, because that shows perseverance, shows how you're learning, it shows your thought process. And they don't want to show the mud that they go through to get to the outcome. And it's like, that's what actually will get you hired, because it shows that consistency. And now you're really familiar. And again, I know you. I know what you're working on. I know the projects you're doing because I've seen them for the last 3 months. Now when a role pops up, I holler at you.
Yeah. No, for sure. And that's why I teach people, like, okay, recruiting may give us a hard time, so let's go find that hiring manager or somebody on the team.
Yep.
And that was going to bring me back to another question, or not think a question, but you was talking about your brand and who knows you. It's why I'm big on all my clients. Every time I'm reviewing their LinkedIn for a revamp, I'm like, okay, I see a big issue here. You're not posting on LinkedIn.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'm telling them to brand themselves, not to be an influencer, but hey, a lot of people, I hate it. They reach out to me, hey, you can you get me a job or this or that? One, I'm not going to do that because you didn't even ask how I'm doing. But two, if I'm trying to get a referral, the least you could do is have stuff on your page so people go back to your page. So, oh, man, this dude is awesome. You know I do this. Hey, we can use this guy. Versus all you're doing is retweeting and liking posts. Yeah. Like, I don't know anything about you. You're probably going to get left on read.
Oh, I seen him and Abdi had a great conversation on Abdi's post last week about X, Y, and Z. They're going back and forth. I know Abdi, it's just like little things like that shows like you're a real person, you're engaging with the community, and I have some, and it, to me, it's just like, have your LinkedIn have something that stands out from other people's, because most LinkedIn's I go to, they're just liking and reposting things. They're not doing anything. So when I find somebody that's actually talking, I'm like, oh, thank you. I can actually find something and see what this person thinks. And now I want to interview them. Like I want to make sure this is clear to everybody, understand from a hiring manager's perspective, all y'all resumes look the same right now.
Yeah.
They all look the same.
They're
nobody's standing out.
They're all perfect.
They all come from ChatGPT. Y'all matching the job description perfect. Yeah. I can't tell what's real and what's not real. So then I got to go do some digging. And when I do digging, all of y'all look the same on LinkedIn too. Like it's crazy. I'm telling you, if you're rare and you're standing out, you're gonna push through.
You just gave me an idea to tell somebody to stand out. I'm gonna tell my clients, hey, if everybody's resume is looking the same, on one of your bullet points, put a dad joke on there. See if that works. See if like they read that and just say, man, I had to interview you just off a dad joke.
Man, you know, it's funny to that point, right? Recently there was a role that we were trying to fill on one of the teams I work with, and I was interviewing one of the guys. I don't know how he got through, but he got through because he had a perfect resume. You interview the guy and you're like, you talked about SQL in your resume. You can't answer basic SQL questions. You talked about Tableau in your resume. We asked you if you've used any data visualization tools, and you're stuttering. I'm concerned. We've lost the plot. How do we? You know, he had a perfect resume, but and I'm not mad at him for having the perfect resume. He's being told that use ChatGPT to get the perfect resume. And to AJ's point, right? If everybody got a perfect resume, how do you stand out? Right. And this changed like 3-4 years ago. It wasn't like this. There was no ChatGPT resume. Now everybody got a perfect resume.
That's because people back then was trying to trick people like, hey, copy the job description, put it all white and small font.
Wow, that's wicked.
They're still telling people to do that, and it does not work.
Does it go through the system, ATS?
It doesn't work.
They think it does, but it doesn't work.
It don't work.
It doesn't work at all.
This is some like black magic or something. Yeah. What's going on?
It doesn't work. But nah, man, it's like I said, when it comes to that part, the resumes, you know, you have the resume writers. Of course, they can write a good resume, but they don't even know how to help you on different things you should know. Like when I'm working with people and we're doing the resumes, I'm like, okay, you say you do this. We just talked about this. It's like in one of my clips. The guy was still on help desk, was trying to get off help desk. I can't get no interviews. I was like, one, the resume was bad. But he had all this good experience that wasn't showcased throughout the resume. You got CrowdStrike as a skill, but I don't see it in the job description.
Yeah.
You led this IT asset project, but you don't talk more about what you do.
Mm.
So I'm like, you're the one that's keeping yourself sidelined because you are not bragging on yourself. And I found out a lot of people, one, don't brag on themselves enough. And two, they don't have their highlights together of what they did. And that's what makes it hard for them when it comes time to look for a job. That's why I'm always telling people, hey, interview all the time so you can stay sharp. You'll figure out what people are looking for.
Yeah. That's my biggest regret, honestly. Like, there was a season of my life where I wasn't interviewing much. Now, I mean, I'm outside now. But there was a season where I wasn't interviewing much. And, like, you realize, oh, it's a muscle. I have to work out that interview muscle. Like, doing the job and the interview, completely two different things.
The interview harder than the job.
The interview is harder than the job.
Always to me.
And I agree. People think they're hotter than what they are. They think, oh, I could get that job. Okay, go interview for it. Go apply. See if you even get a call back. Okay, so you didn't get a call back, something's wrong with your resume. You're not meeting the part. Okay, you got a call back, but you didn't get past HR. Okay, that's more. People think, like, and I think great advice, one, I tell this to people all the time. If the only time you're interviewing is when it's zero sum and you need that job, you're in fight or flight.
Time. You're the worst time.
The Navy SEALs say this. We learned this in the military. You do not rise to the occasion. You sink to the level of your training. You are not going to perform well in that situation. You need to get reps up. You need to get shots. And you need to learn your value. To me, when you go interview and you find out, I just got an offer for $200K. My current job is paying me $110. Some conversations need to be had. If you like that job and you want to stay, some conversations need to be had. Or you go take that money. Or you find out, I thought, because I'm getting 120 here, I can get 120 somewhere else. All the jobs I'm only getting called back for are only 80. Like, you need to get some of this data to understand what am I missing? What are the skills I need? And you don't want to have that conversation when you need to.
Yeah.
You need to. And so I think I say 100%. Like, and the thing that I think people think about is like, oh, like, I'm wasting their time. They're wasting your time. Like we gotta, as humans, gotta stop caring about the corporation more than we care about ourselves.
Man, thank you for saying
that. The corporation is gonna interview 300 people for one role. They don't care about the other 299. They're trying to find the best fit. So you try to find the best company too. It's a two-way market, but we always end up in the marketplace when we need them, not before. And you gotta go from a place of power.
It
changes your interviews.
Facts.
It's just like dating. I think it's the same thing.
You go in them interviews, talk crazy when you're in a place of power.
Oh, for sure.
You in them interviews, 500K. Calm. You're like, yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that, but I do know this. And I can speak to this and I can speak to that. And it's like, it's a whole different conversation because you're not scared. You're not worried about things. And you're able to speak from a place of, I'm comfortable where I'm at right now. Yeah. Don't need this job.
Y'all called me.
Right.
Y'all hit me up.
I agree. I do hate, though, when I know, I don't like when the interview doesn't seem like it's not necessarily genuine, but like I've had some great interviews where I'm talking to directors, like maybe we worked at a mutual company or something before, even though I didn't know them then, but it's like we had a conversation. It was cool. Versus you get my resume, you want to nitpick it. Like, oh, hey, how did you do that? Like in the way you asked it, let me know. I was like, all right, y'all not even trying to pick me.
Yeah.
Y'all just interviewed me to say y'all met y'all quota. It's cool. Yeah. I get it, fam.
You interviewed the black guy?
Yeah, I get it. No, because when you said,
take to a child,
when you said a type, I did an interview for Toyota. What was it, like last year or something like that? I only wanted to work there because they got the headquarters in Plano. Oh. And at the certain job you get like a vehicle allowance. So you can get whatever vehicle you want up to like $700 a month or whatever. And I was like, okay, cool. And then I looked at everybody and then I found out everybody that was on the panel used to work together. And I was different from them. I was like, okay, I see how this is going to go. Yeah. It's cool. it's cool, man.
It's cool.
Yeah, but no, I mean, that's the reason why, like, I was telling y'all earlier about the guy I reached out to the deputy guy, and he was happy that I reached out because he was like, hey, it's not many of us in InfoSec, let alone, like, you did the right thing with at least, like, putting yourself on my radar. So I know your face.
Exactly.
Which saves information. So, like, even if I end up leaving or something doesn't work out, but now I have a connection to a person that said, oh, I probably know this guy because everything's a small knit. GRC professionals, Black GRC professionals know other black GRC professionals.
For sure.
SecOps IR people know other black SecOps and IR people. Same. So it gets super small, so you never know who knows who and who knows who works at certain companies. So as DeJuan Lightfoot would say, it's not about what you know, but who knows you.
Yeah. Facts. Shout out to DeJuan Lightfoot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. man. Lab every day. Listen, he got to come on the show because...
You gotta get him on the show.
He's a big reason to how I've been able to like still do this like for the like 5 years because he was the only one 5 years ago that was on YouTube.
Oh, for sure. I think he was on YouTube like 2017.
Yeah, he was the only person.
One of the first tech black creators and making it sound cool. Like he's talking in like plain English, man. Like, yo, this is kind of cool.
Yeah, man. And so I was like, yeah. But for both of y'all. I know in the past. Oh, this is another question I got for you. Are we going to get GRC engineer for Azure?
Yeah.
It's coming.
It's coming. I'm working on something with a buddy of mine who's smarter on Azure than me to put that together. But yeah, it's coming. And GCP too.
Cool. No, I asked that because when I was doing another interview, he used to be, I think like the, I don't know if he was a CISO. He was something at my company at Optum. I forget his title. And I think he's like the VP of professional services now at the company I was talking to. And he was talking about how a lot of companies still have a lot of legacy on-prem Windows AD stuff and how like that's why Azure like is still there because of that connectivity of that and why it actually is a smart play for some people to actually lock into some Azure stuff. Just the strength of knowing it can get you contracts or jobs.
I think people should just pick a cloud. Mm-hmm. Pick one and go all in. Just whether it's Azure or AWS, even GCP, like there's enough market share across the board for all of them. They all are making a lot of money and a lot of companies use them. I think people get paralyzed sometimes trying to decide which one is going
to be. I've been telling people to go to Azure lately.
Go whatever you can learn the fastest and get the skills because you can do well. And then once if you get into Azure and you grow a nice career, if I needed to, I could easily pivot from AWS to Azure because I know so much about AWS and a lot of the services.
They must be the same.
They all do the same thing. They just call them different. Microsoft changes their names every other week. But
I agree.
Just pick a cloud provider, go all in, become an expert on it, and there is enough jobs out there for you if you do so. Azure has a lot of opportunities. AWS has a lot of opportunities. It's a gold mine out there. Yeah.
So speaking of like GRC in the cloud, are you a fan of Wiz?
Yeah, I like Wiz. I got no problem with Wiz and that whole space. I think a lot that you can do with Wiz or some of these other tools you can do with the native cloud tools on each of the cloud providers. But I get why people spend a lot of money on those tools because they do offer some additional stuff. I think it's another one of those things though, like a lot of these tools are so underutilized. Like all the features of that Wiz does, most companies are only using the 5% of it, which is just like, why are you paying so much money if you're not going to use the whole feature?
I'm with you, but I think one of the things are those, I don't know if it's a framework or regulation thing, because I know before Wiz, we had Prisma, and I didn't really care for Prisma too much.
Palo Alto?
Yeah.
Now it was connected to like you'll see the thing. It's connected to whatever rule or security rule or something like that based on yada yada yada. But I don't know. We seemed like it was built like from people like you that's been in the cloud.
Yeah.
That know how to use it. I mean, for me, it really speeds up a lot of analysis because it's right there. Granted, I still can do the same thing if I want like my CloudTrail logs or looking at VPC flows or.
That's the magic of it, though, is like it takes some of that stuff and makes it faster, brings it all together and makes it easier for you. Like it would take you more, some more work to go get it from CloudTrail, VPC flow logs, et cetera. So Wiz bringing it together. And I mean, they like I think you're right, too, like from the user experience. They thought about that really well compared to like some of the other tools where I think in the past, cyber tools just didn't care about user experience. Like, whatever.
Oh, no.
It don't matter. But now they realize that these are humans using it, too. So you need to have a good user experience.
Yeah.
I think is why Wiz has been able to grow because their UX is better than everybody.
Yes, for sure. And that's what they paid attention to that because I'm like, all this other stuff is trash. And I hate it. It reminds me of like. Years ago, working for McAfee, they had took over this product called Nitro that they was going to put out as a SIM, and it was horrible. If you just Google McAfee Nitro and look at it, you'd be like, it's some people in the government that's actually still using them tools. That so and EPO, and it's a couple of other crap. I don't know how they still using it because they should just kind of let them things die because they haven't innovated since. But for people who want to get into GRC, right? though. Does your advice from, let me see if I can look, but I want to say, let me see if I type in like AJ Young textual, what comes up real quick. Let's see. Okay, so that's 3 years ago. Because, yeah, our episode was How Sock 2 Artists Can Be Less Painful. Insights for AJ Young. And I got to redo that thumbnail. Check this out. It's a throwback for you right there.
Wow. Hey. Homeboy, he got the chains on,
that
too.
That was my...
In real life.
That was my my seed round announcement in the Miami Herald, I think.
He right here in the blue shirt. AJ Young, CEO, co-founder of Bite Check. We Are Miami. Then I got this from the Army, the cybersecurity thing with him 3 years ago. Mm. It's a decent thumbnail.
He was in it.
Yeah, but, okay. I got to follow Cyber Takes, man. I just seen your stuff popped up.
Yeah, man.
Let me scrap
Cyber that. Takes. Oh, yo, check out Cyber Takes. Was it Hot Takes?
Or Cyber Takes.
Cyber Takes with AJ Young. A lot of hot takes there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, from 3 years ago, and I think it's almost going to be 4 years ago for that episode, but has your advice changed? Or is it slightly modified to get into GRC?
I would say slightly modified, but it's still focus on the cloud. I think that's the number one way to stand out, whether it's AWS, Azure, whatever. I think the modification comes from the engineering side of it. I don't think 3 years ago I would say that learning Python is a requirement. Today I would say, yes, learn Python. I would say the other modification is the portfolio piece I talked about. If you're trying to break into GRC, especially from a non-cyber background, you need a portfolio. There's zero chance you're going to break through the noise without one. You need to be able to showcase projects of you building stuff, automating compliance, translating JSON into CSV, taking data out of an Excel and putting it in JSON, doing all the back and forth that's needed there is the advice. But yeah, still today, like when people ask me, like, what do I do? I'm like, cloud. Learn cloud. Before I can tell you anything else, you got to learn the cloud. You gotta be able to speak the language. You gotta know what an EC2 instance is. You gotta know what a Lambda function is. You just gotta know some of these things to even get through the first part of it. So yeah, I would say learn cloud, and then they need to really embrace. I think there's an opportunity for people coming from non-cyber backgrounds. If you go all in on GRC engineering and position yourself through portfolios, your brand as a GRC engineer, you will be able to skip ahead of people. Because again, the current GRC professionals are trying to catch, some of them are trying to catch up, and a lot of them are still fighting this. So you have an opportunity right now.
And to that point, Andre, right? That last point you just said, a lot of them are fighting this. I kid you not. I've worked on different consulting projects, you know, with my employer, you know, different people that I've worked with. I know security people that refuse to learn cloud, right? I know legacy, you know, information assurance, you know, system security engineers or ISIs, you know, in the government, I know that refuse to learn cloud. There are auditors that are barking at him, hurling, you know, rich language at him, you know, in the comment section, arguing with him. And AJ, you know, right at the point, I'm like, hey, listen, we're no longer arguing about this anymore. Right. Like, the industry is going a certain direction. Noah's Ark, get on the ship while you can. Otherwise, it's gonna be tough, because, you know, and I'm sure you know SOC analyst folks that refuse to learn other technologies, a part of the full stack. And this, especially with GRC, you know, they want to stick with the spreadsheet. They want to stick with the traditional way of doing it because they think that's job security, right? But the real job security is in your skill security, and the real skill security is having skills that are always ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. That's the security. But most people don't think that far.
I think to double click on that is, like, if you're a GRC professional right now, ask yourself, if you were to get laid off today, how hard would it be for you to go land a job?
And it's hard for everybody right now.
It's hard for everybody. But if you're a GRC pro without technical skills, I mean, I know a few people that have recently went through it, and it was tough. Like they just couldn't get past a lot of the noise because they didn't even, and then they were trying to like go and like hurry up and get certs and stuff. And I'm like, you're now fighting, it's too late. it's too late because your background, your nothing else matches. Like I love when I see somebody's profile and they got all these certs and I'm like, wait a second. Nothing you've done matches any of these certs you have. Like, you just got certs. You don't actually know anything. Like, your resume doesn't match. And it's like, so I think if you're a GRC professional, like, man, like, don't get caught holding the bag and not have technical skills. Have something to lean on so that you can go and say, hey, I'm not your typical GRC pro. I know you guys are cutting your GRC department, but I'm not your typical one.
No, facts. And that was that's crazy hard. That you said people are refusing to. But you know what? You're not lying about that because there are people that are recently just got, that's been at the company years and just got like their cloud practitioner.
Mm-hmm. And cloud's been around since.
You're right.
I got that, what, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah.
Just because I'm working alerts. I'm like, S3 bucket, what's that?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
That's why I got cloud practitioner too, literally in 2017, because we were doing all these audits and everybody was hosting on AWS and I didn't understand what none of the words meant. I was like, let me just go take this cert that I saw that they had a cert for people that were not cloud people. I was like, let me just go take this cert because I'm trying to understand, like, these are all new words. And I'm like, y'all asking me questions about these things and I don't even know what these things are. So I was like, and then that sparked interest and just kept going. But yeah, when I got it, everybody went crazy, like, oh my God. You got cloud practitioner? And it's like, hey, we all should probably know this. Like, that was my first thought, was like, we all need to know this. This isn't just a special, like,
it's, what you mean the bucket shouldn't be public?
Right. Literally, it's funny you say that because it's the same way. And I think that's, like, I said this the other day, is like, number one skill you need to have, and you said this earlier too, are like, curiosity. Are you curious enough to go down this path? Because people that struggle in this field, people that never get promoted that or never able to like push past wherever they're at, if they're in a certain role and they want to leave it, they're not curious enough. Because you work with enough technologies in our field to see something and say, I need to go learn some more about that. Yeah. I'm going to go Google that. Yeah, and now with AI, no excuse.
That's me with K8s right now.
Yeah,
like I see Kubernetes, I know what it is, but I need to learn more.
Right. Yeah, so you're curious. So you're going to start diving deeper. And then that might lead to a cert, but that's a natural way to a cert versus like, I need this cert because it's going to help me land a job. No, it's not. The knowledge that you have from the cert, because I remember one dude popped up on a interview. He has security specialty. So I started asking security specialty level questions.
Yeah.
No chance.
Yeah.
No chance.
I remember I did it before.
Right. No chance he could answer.
I asked
it.
The question on the test. I passed the exam.
Right.
The
and it's like, bro, like don't do that. Don't put something on your resume you're not ready to talk about it. Even some of my dogs recently, they just got done with one of their projects. And they were putting the portfolio together. So I called them and was talking about it. Started asking questions. I said, hey, bro, you need to go back and do that project again. Because you're not talking about it as if somebody that completed this project. You're talking about it as somebody that read about a project. And that's going to come out in an interview. And I was like, I can open the door for you. I tell this to people all the time. I can open the door for you. I can get you into certain rooms. One, I'm not going to put my name on you unless I believe that you're gonna do it right because I'm messing up my reputation. But two, once you're in that room, you're on your own. I can't answer the questions for you, my boy. You
got to
answer
baby.
Those questions. So you better don't put stuff on your resume that you can't talk about.
Nah, that's facts. I'm glad you said that because that's the other thing. Back in 2020, 2021, I had just got on TriHackMe. I was like, oh, you know, boy, I'm going to do one of these rooms. It was one of those boss of the sock rooms.
Yeah.
I'm one of the few people that has one of those videos where I'm talking through the investigation. So I used to send that to like recruiters, like, hey, you got anything you want to share with the team? Yeah. Yeah. Then watch this video.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people could go and try hack me and they would do this stuff, but they can't talk through it. I can talk through it because it was something I was doing on a daily.
Because you actually do it. You're speaking from lived experience versus something I just kind of pretended to do. And it's so clear to see in interviews. It's like
you can smell it.
It's like, bro, like, and then sometimes I'll turn off. Like, I'll have to finish the interview because I got to finish the interview. But I'm not listening no more. I've already while you're talking, I've already filled out the sheet that you are not moving on to the next round. And it's like, don't do that. Don't put yourself in that position. You need to be able to talk through these things from experience. You need to go, like you were saying earlier with the labs. The best part about the labs are getting confused. And then not working, and then you having to go to sleep mad, waking up the next day and figuring it out. That's when you've actually done the lab. If you've done a lab and it worked from start to finish,
you probably
just copied. You didn't do anything. But if you did a lab and you got confused, you got mad, you had to close the laptop, go on a walk, got to come back the next day.
You're crying in the car.
That's when you've really been labbing. That's when that dude you just talking about said lab every day. He's not talking about just log in and do something that makes you feel good. be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Get confused. That is the goal here. It's like,
or you do a you're doing some stuff and find out that macOS changed some stuff with Oracle, so you can't even set it up the right way.
Right.
So now you're trying to use what's the joint that you can buy from the app store that'll let you run Windows?
Oh,
Parallels.
Yeah,
we were trying to run Parallels on there.
I used to run Parallels when I was in the Army on my Mac, man.
Yeah, and then Parallels not even working. It's just something in the system of Mac. Parallels is
it's a virtual machine you can run on the Mac.
But that didn't even work.
Emulate Windows.
Oh, that didn't work.
No, because then so Mac is smart. Apple shifty. They switched everything to start being more for silicon.
Yeah,
and so they start limiting what you can do on Intel devices. And so that made me go get like a gaming PC because I was like, okay, Mac, I see what you're doing. I respect it, but respectfully, I'm gonna have to go back to PC. So I use both right now.
Yeah.
We had this happen the other day in the Patreon where a guy was doing a lab and he was struggling. And I was so happy about him asking for help because, one, it showed people that like, hey, like this stuff is hard. But like it was just something simple where like he was trying to validate some stuff with AWS through the CLI. But the way he set up his CLI, he was in one region, and then within the console, he set up stuff in a different region. So it was checking, and it kept coming back failing. He's like, I have a setup. I don't know what's going on. But it's like, now he has something to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Now he can go in an interview, and they're like, well, tell me about a time that you had to push through a problem. Mm. Well, one time I was setting up this security hub automation for this NIST 853 assessment, and my commands just weren't working. I was trying to get Bedrock to work. And you start talking about all these services and you talk through the journey of how you figured, bro, I'm locked in as a hiring manager.
Oh, yeah.
I'm locked. He wouldn't have been able to do that if he would have just been like, oh, never mind. I'm not going to do this lab. I'm going to go. And he had to ask for help. And then even when I gave him advice, he was trying stuff and it still wasn't working because he was doing it wrong. But he had to keep. And it's like, bro, that's the, for anybody listening, like, if you're not willing to do that, if you're not willing to run into a wall over and over again, I'm sorry you're not getting them six figures that you heard about. Like this stuff is it's a transaction. I like you're not going to get the money unless you are willing to do the hard things and then continue to do the hard things, which is just being confused. Like I am perpetually confused in my job. Like that's just the nature. If I kind of think about it like I hooped in college, played sports my whole life. Like when you're going hard and you're like, you're doing a workout, especially at the college level at D1, you should be losing the ball. You should be making mistakes if you're actually going that hard. If you're just going through the motions, you're not. And to me now, I use that as a signal. It's like, if I'm not uncomfortable at some point while I'm doing some of my stuff, I'm not going hard enough. I'm not going deep enough. I'm only staying in the areas and the tools and the services that I'm comfortable in. But when I start to go deeper and it's like, damn, bruh, I thought I could do this, but I couldn't. That's when I know I'm in a spot I need to be in. And I got to keep going because it's like, yo, that's where the magic happens. Like that's where you actually can talk about things and find. And it might, a lot of times people think it's like, oh, I didn't figure out that lab. That's not what it's about. It's not about that lab. I don't care about that lab. I care about what you just learned that you're going to be able to apply to something else in a real world situation. And a lot of people lean on the say, oh, I don't have any experience. Well, you're not building. I don't even buy that no more when I'm interviewing people. I'm like, what are you building, bro? Like it's 2025. Every cloud has a free tier. All these, like you could spin some stuff up and go build. You need to be building. And I want to hear about what you're building. I want to hear about what you did 5 years ago in some project at a company. What have you built recently? Yeah. And it's too easy. It's to me, it's too, especially if you're like, I get it. Like somebody could be like, oh, AJ, what are you building? Like, hey, bro, I don't have to. Like, I don't have to do that right now.
I built a startup. How about that?
Even though I'm building stuff, I am building stuff. But it's like, if you're, don't come to me and say, I'm hungry. I want to get out of my current situation and I want to get into tech and you're not building anything. Because like, and it's not even on no gatekeeping, but like, if I had access to the tools that these dudes have today, like when I was getting out of the military and trying to get in, bro, I'm starting doing, it's different. Everything's different than what I had to do 2016, getting out of the Army to try to get into this field, which was just like cert and trying to message people on LinkedIn and like figuring, like I didn't even know about the cloud. I didn't even know about AWS. I didn't even know about this stuff. I wish I would have heard about a podcast like this to listen to and hear people have somebody like him telling me and giving me the game. So it's like, bro, there's too much information. Yeah. Too much ability to build and then showcase your skills. It's to me, it's not easy, but it's right in front of people. And it's just a matter of the difference is, are you willing to go through that mud, get confused, go to sleep mad as hell because you couldn't figure it out? Like, it's just a part of it. Like, we've all been there trying to figure out writing some script or doing whatever, like, and it's just not working. No matter what you do.
It's always something simple.
It's a comma, something dumb. And it's like, and it's just no matter what you do, it's not working. And then you got to take a break. You come back and then it finally works. And it's like, whatever. But that experience builds a muscle of being comfortable with shit not working. And you're just like, whatever. I got to keep going because eventually, at some point, it's going to work. I just know I got to keep going. But a lot of these people, they just stop. They're not pushing past that point.
Yeah. That remind me of video games. So you'd be like that when I was a kid. I couldn't figure something out. Right. Get mad. Go play basketball on my side and come back in and figure it out.
Same thing. It's the same mindset. It's just like being, but it's like, are you willing to do what you did when you're trying to beat the game with cyber?
But real quick, and it's probably put you on the spot, but what would be like the top three questions you like for interviewers or interviewees to ask you?
I like when they ask about, like the hardest problem that I'm trying to solve right now. Like what's the toughest thing on my plate specifically, because I think that's a nice technique to figure out like what are, and then when they follow up with like, oh, okay, like I have some experience X, Y, and Z with that. Like, would love to talk more about that. I like when they're inquisitive about the company and the culture as well. Like I don't necessarily want someone who's just like so thirsty that they just need a job. They don't care about the company they're going to work for. Cause I was like, bro, what type of person are you that you don't care about, you know, where you're going to work for? And I think just like in interviews, the thing that always makes somebody memorable is they did some level of research. And whether that's about me, whether that's about the company, but like, I remember sometimes somebody would come on there and be like, hey, Jay, tell me about your second jump at an airborne school, which is like a line in my bio, like in the deep buried in my bio on LinkedIn. So like you would have to have been reading that to very intently to see that. I'm like, oh, shit. OK. And like I remember that person. So like, or they'll be like when I was interviewing people at Byte Check, they were like, oh, I seen you guys did X, Y, and Z a year ago. And I was like, damn, bro. That's cool. So it's like just showing a little bit. And I actually talk about this in the book. There's a chapter in the book about interviews. And I talk about the right research to do. And to me, if you show up to an interview and you just know some basics about the company, whatever. But if you know about the recent blog the CEO posted that's talking about X, Y, and Z, that shows something different. If you know about that, like that to me, that's so it's just like showing a little bit of effort is and like those can come out in those questions. Yeah. For sure. One thing that turns me off is asking about like work-life balance, money, that type of stuff. Because it's like let's one, have that conversation with HR. Two, we're not even at that point yet. Mm-hmm. You're asking me questions about a role you don't have. Yeah. I'm still evaluating a whole lot of people. And you're asking me about the balance of the job. You're asking me about pay. Whoa, that's a little bit presumptive to think that you are now getting an offer just because you talked to me for 30 minutes. So it's just like let's keep the conversation on us getting to know each other. And that's what I think two people don't realize is that you're getting to know someone. So like a lot of times, like I get in trouble for this sometimes, but I don't follow like the normal standard questions because I'm really trying to get to know people. So I'll hear something that you say in your intro and I'll just ask you about that. Then I'll hear something you say in that question and I'll ask you about that. Which again is why I tell people, don't lie. Because I'm going to find out because I'm just pulling threads from your stories and how you communicate. And a lot of times I'm not even, people don't realize this, like the answers are the answers. It's how you answer.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the way you're carrying delivery. Yourself. And all of that is way more important than the actual substance because every job you have to learn the company, how they do things, the tools. Stack, yeah. There's a whole training of like actually what you're going to do. Like and I think about it from software engineering, we don't consider an engineer fully ramped. It takes like 3 to 6 months for a software engineer to get fully ramped. When I say fully ramped, they're committing code to production that is actually trusted and bear. Like it takes them a while. And like in every other field, we think people are showing up. And like, I think a lot of times people say this and like, sorry, we were talking about this earlier. Like you don't just show up on day one and like get access to the kingdom and start doing stuff. I was like, bro, like there's going to be a step here. So like when I'm in the interview, I'm getting to know you and like your thought process. And that's why I'm telling you the projects come up because what better things to talk about than something related to the company? And a lot of times people will tell stories from their past jobs and it just sounds like they're talking shit. Also not a good thing to do. Don't sound, no matter what happened at your last job, we don't want to hear
about
it.
Don't be a scoring X.
Yeah, we don't want to hear about that.
No matter how bad she was, right. Don't do that.
We don't want to be, we don't want to hear about that, bro. Like, take, even if it wasn't your fault, take some blame. Or just don't even make it sound like it was an amicable, like we just both said mutual thing.
It was an amicable.
Right, bro. Like, we just decided to leave. Like, you know, like, but don't sit in there and be like, yeah, I had the worst boss ever. They were terrible at this. It's like, hey, bro, well, I'm that. Everything you just described is me, so I don't think this is going to work.
Yeah. No, for sure, that's a good one, because I know, like, that's another thing I'm always telling clients. Like, I do this thing where it'll be, like, an impromptu, like, coaching video, and I'll be preparing for, especially, like, if it's a SaaS company or some type of company, they got an offering, get on Loom, and I'll say, hey, I'm about to do an interview, I'm recording, so, guys, I'm researching the blogs and all this other stuff, I'm looking at their product, this and that, and that way, like, I would practice out some things that I would ask. Like, I remember with the one company, I was talking to the guy who pretty much has an interview style like yours that we used to work at Optiv and stuff. And I brought up a term because I wasn't even familiar. I'm more familiar with IOCs.
Yeah.
On their site, they had, because they specialize in Active Directory. And so on their site, they was talking about indicators of exposure. And I said that in the interview. So I know that stuck out with them. I was like, yeah, I was on the site.
Absolutely. Yeah. It shows that you care. It shows that you care. Yeah. I also tell people, like, look at the job descriptions, because the job description will tell you at what stage they're at and the type of problems that they're trying to solve. So if you look at a GRC job description and it's like, we need you to help maintain our SOC 2 and ISO. They already have it.
Yeah, you got a program.
So pretty mature
program. So you're coming in. So then your questions, your answers need to be tailored to that. A lot of people go into interviews and they're going to say the same thing every time. And it's like, bro, look at the job description. They're saying maintain, or we need you to build the program from scratch. And all your answers are talking about maintaining the program.
Oh no,
you're not hitting on the right thing. So a lot of times the job description will give you clues. The job description also tells you. This is why I tell people all the time: if you're not interviewing, you need to be looking at JDs of potential jobs you want, because guess what they have in there? Tech stack.
Yeah.
They're going to say what tech stack. So you can look at that and say, oh, shit.
Let's see if we got access to that in the environment.
Right. And then you're like, I don't know anything about any of these services. Great. I know what I need to focus on for the next 2 months. Like, a lot of times people tell me, they're like, oh, what should I do? What should I study? And I'm like, what job do you want? X, Y, and Z. I'm like, okay, what companies you want to work at? Give me 5 companies you want to work at. These 5. Go find that job at those companies. Work on whatever you see in those job descriptions that you don't have skills on. Like, it's the information's in front of you, but like, it's a matter of like, are you going to actually do the work and like go and learn the skills? But to your point, you were digging on the website. You're looking at, and you, I love the fact that you do the video showing people what to do, because they need that. They need that guidance to know how to like research a company and get that right information, because that does, it makes you memorable. And you, what I think people understand is they don't have empathy for the interviewer. On a lot of times I batch my interviews, right? Like, so I'll say like from 2 to 4 today, I'm going to do 4 interviews, and then I got to do another, maybe 4 more the next day.
It's time consuming,
right? Bro, that's 30 minutes straight of just talking to you. Then I go immediately to a new one. After that, and I'm going to hang out with the kids. I'm going to go to my son's basketball practice. And then I'll maybe later on fill out my interview form about the conversation. If I'm like, oh yeah, he's the one that looked up the indicators of exposure. Yeah, he was dope. I'm trying to recall. Like, I'm trying to remember who I talked to, because I just talked to 4 of you. And you all look, like I told you, all the resumes look the same. All your answers sound the same. So what is the one thing you're going to do to be different? Something as simple as that. Just that little thing is like, oh yeah, I remember him. Let me rank him a 5 over the other people in the scoring. It's just like little, people don't realize all the little stuff that goes into it. And to me, it's one, you have to get your resume, get your portfolio, get your talk track right, your brand, all that to get through the door. Then you have to figure out the game in the interview, right? And that involves a whole nother set of game to play, right? Like, and then once you get the job, it's a whole nother game to play to maintain the job too. But it's like, these are all 3 different games. And I think people look at it as like this one big game that you just play and I get to the end. It's like, no, you got to be strategic every step of the way.
Yeah, for sure. So what's next for AJ?
Man, slow mornings. Just continued slow mornings. Just being able to take my kids to school every day, pick them up from school, living in Puerto Rico on a beautiful island. You know, I got the book, going on a book tour. I'll be in Chicago next week, Philly after that, bunch of cities. Just follow London. London's going to be crazy in November. If you are in the UK and you listen to this, if you're in Europe, you need to be in London. It's going to be a movie. It's going to be nasty work. But yeah, man, I actually, you know, I'll make this announcement here on the pod. No one knows this. You might know this. I'm starting to write my next book. So I guess that was what's next for me. And the book is going to be called The Rise and Fall of Bytecheck. And it's going to be, for legal purposes, fiction based on a true story. So I can't get sued. But it's going to be a cautionary tale to people that want to start a company and understand the ups and downs. And I'm going to tell the story, man. So that book will, I don't know when, because I have to get inspired to write it and spend a lot of time on the beach. But right now, man, let's just focus on this book, growing the Patreon. We got something special brewing with the GRC Engineering Club Patreon that, you know, there's a lot on there. I gave away on there. There's a brand builder course where I told the literal playbook that I use to go from zero to over 40,000 followers on LinkedIn, and all the strategies I still use today to have posts go crazy. I think it's 8 or 9 module course on there that people can watch and go through if you're a member. Bunch of labs, bunch of Q&As, just did a Q&A recently this week, bunch of podcasts, private podcasts with Abdi, private podcasts with a few other folks. We're recording another one tomorrow. So my goal is to save the GRC engineering profession, or the GRC profession, turn it into GRC engineering, and hopefully do that while continuing to have slow mornings, because I enjoy the life that I've been able to build for myself and my family. I truly believe in like anchored ambition and being successful, but doing it the right way without killing myself. So just trying to run it up, man. I'm trying to make as much money as possible and live a good life. But at the same time, like everything I do is about impact. I've been fortunate to be Abdi's mentor and a few other folks. And all I tell them when they ask me, like, what do I got to do, you know, pay you back? I will never take a dollar from them, despite how many times Abdi tries to give me money. I still try. But I tell them just pay it forward. Go bring up another person that looks like us to get into this field. And to me, that's what I want to be really next for me, or for forever for me, is that there's people out there that I've positively impacted their lives, and they can look back and say, like, yo, that person was a more of a contributor than a taker in this life. And yeah, so all that to say, slow mornings.
And I forgot to even ask this, because we talked about the book, yeah, and everything. Where can they get the book?
Amazon. Smooth, $19.99. Or you pop up at one of the book signing events. There's free books at a lot of these events, because the great folks at Compile, 360 Advance, and Omega Systems are the sponsors of the book tours. So there'll be books there. I'll be doing live signings. Yeah, so pull up in Chicago, Philly, Orlando, Nashville, Boston, Charlotte, Dallas. We'll be back in Dallas.
Houston.
No, New London, Orleans.
Jacksonville. You go to my LinkedIn, you'll see the tour dates. But yeah, man, it's gonna be crazy. The GRC community, very clear. We were in New York a couple weeks ago, Vegas for DEF CON. I mean, people want to be in person right now. The GRC community wants to get together. So, and 2025 is just the start. 2026 is already looking crazy. I'm not going to even say yet what I got planned for 2026.
Next tape coming soon.
Yeah. But there's 2026 is going to be a movie, man. It's going to be a movie. 2025 is just the start. So, yeah, it's exciting. I never thought this would happen with the book. I truly was just hoping, like, a few of the homies read it. I could stop getting asked so many questions on LinkedIn, and people could just go read the book. But it's taken off, man, selling so many copies, and has sparked a whole movement. So I'm forever grateful and excited about this tour, excited to get on the road and travel and be able to travel a lot with my dog here too, and just experience some cool things. It's gonna be dope.
What about you, Abdi?
Man, before we get to talk about me, I do want to say thanks again for always just opening up your platform for us, taking care of and looking out for us, and showing us nothing but love, man. Every time I come to Dallas, you know, you show me nothing but love, show the homies nothing but love. So thank you for opening up your platform, bro, and bettering on yourself and continuing to, you know, you and Destiny continuing to build this great platform, and, you know, just showing us the way. number one. Number two, I also want to give this man his flowers. I've known him over 6 years, almost 7 years. And, you know, it doesn't get realer than that, man. With AJ, he shows me nothing but love. I've offered him money countless times. I still offer him money today. He won't take it. So I try to, you know, we've partnered up on the Patreon, you know, mentoring people. And, you know, we're only charging like $10, $20, if that.
$10.
Yeah. $10 a month, right? You know, and, you know, with AJ, you know, everybody, the thing is, you know, Honor, everybody wants to be the number one. Everybody wants to be, you know, everybody doesn't understand the concept of playing your position. Tim Cook, you know, Satya Nadella. They didn't start Microsoft. They didn't start as that number one. It took time to get there. You know, Khabib's cousin, Islam Makhachev, he didn't start there, right? You know, very rare you get to be around a number one type of dude who's actively shaping an industry. And you can make a case that AJ might be the number one voice in GRC space, period, because he's actively shaping how the discipline is working. I mean, you and I both know, like, there are people in the SOC space, the, you know, incident response, you know, threat detection space. There are some people where it's not that they're just good at what they do. Is they're so good, they're actually shaping what the standard is. And I believe that's what he's doing right now. That's what we're doing right now. And I'm glad to be a part of that. And, you know, for those who are wondering, you know, is AJ real in real life? Like, yeah, it's real. Like, the love is real in real life. Like, he is not above, you know, talking to people. You know, there's no arrogance with him. You know, it's pure love. And for me, what's next? Definitely, you know, continue on the GRC engineering route, you know, grow within my career as well. Also, you know, do a lot more speaking engagements. And I've been speaking on topics of STEM, leadership advocacy, leadership development. So, you know, 2026, you know, I may or may not have a book coming down the line. And, you know, get married, have 10 kids, you know. The other.
Oh, yeah. Ladies, he is single.
Well, listen, my dad has 9, all with one woman. I got to beat my dad. I got to have 10 with one woman.
He is single, ladies.
I am single.
He dresses nice and smells well.
Hey, I am single. Say mashallah, I am single.
Can confirm he does dress well. There's a picture from New York.
Yo, that New York photo is crazy.
He has this picture from New York looking like fresh off a GQ magazine. I said, damn. Shout out to JR and Unseen Visuals.
Yeah, Unseen Visuals is real, man. But
Abdi's always going to be in a suit. But yeah, like, I want to echo again. Appreciate you for having us on, bro. Always love to chop it up with you. I know we did it on Zoom, but now that I'll be back here in a couple of weeks for the book tour, we'll have to run it back again. But yeah, always love to see the growth and where you're at and all the good work you're doing to help people.
No, I appreciate it. Appreciate y'all. You tapped in. It was like, hey, yo, I'm out there. Let's make it happen. I say less. But guys, listen, we could have made this be like 4 hours. You see, it's getting dark behind us. We're going to do a part two. But I appreciate everybody who made it to the end. And until next time, let's stay textual. And we out. Peace.